The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy we're not recording during a basketball game week.
This is revelatory.
Yes, also, I guess happy we've won two games in a row and, like, what, 6 of 7, and the Georgia Tech game looks really weird now instead of, like, maybe a
harbinger of
the whole program.
Future concerns. Although you never know, the people who thought it was an indictment of the whole program, once the Isaiah Stewart news dropped over the weekend, they just went right back to it.
I tried to get out in front of that and, like, be like, hey, everyone, I don't think Isaiah Stewart's coming to Syracuse.
Definitely
it actually
not
seems
here.
like I think we're running pretty clearly like 4th out of the 5 schools, arguably. And Washington was like everyone down the stretch basically like, yeah, it's gonna be Washington. And I guess like a lot of people thought it was like worse because it was Washington. I'd much rather him not go to Duke. I'm fine with Hop getting a 5-star. Like, I don't think one recruit is going to determine the future of the Syracuse basketball program. So I don't know. I wasn't that upset about it because, like, it seemed to be going that way the whole time. So what can you do?
Yeah. Also, he's probably one and done. Also, until we find out definitively that Mike Hopkins isn't coming back, anything Hop does well at Washington reflects well on us.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I had like two sides of Twitter on my case over the course of like 4 days. One side of which was basically like Syracuse messed up by letting Hopkins leave, which I don't know what that means. Like, he went and took a head coaching job. I don't know what you could have reasonably done to keep him from doing that. And then some people went as far as to say that Boeheim should have retired.
Nope.
I think it's kind of crazy to say that Boeheim should have retired coming off of a really like nice NCAA tournament run last year. A couple years removed from a Final Four, recruiting, you know, it hasn't been what it was in, like, 2010, but it's, you know, we have, like, blue chippers all over the place every year pretty much again. The team's starting to round into form. So, like, are you really going to run your Hall of Fame coach out of town and replace him with his head coach in waiting, who, obviously, I don't blame him, like, for whatever the mediocre record was during his stint as head coach.
4-5.
4-5, yeah, so it wasn't great. I don't think that reflects on Hop. I think he's done a nice job at Washington so far, but, like, were we really going to run Boeheim out of town because of Isaiah Stewart? Like, is that what we're doing here?
Grass is always greener, Dan.
Yeah, seriously. And then then after the game against Pitt, I was like, you know, you could, I think I how dare I say that there are, I think I said many things, and maybe many was a harsh word. Maybe I should have said a few or some things you can criticize Boeheim for in terms of, like, you know, his coaching of the team. There are valid complaints. But, like, he outcoached Coach Tate on the stretch against Duke, and then, like, the team looks to be really, like, doing really well, and whatever he did with Chukwu seems to be working. And I basically, like, you know, I'm a pretty big Boeheim fan and supporter all the time and have never really wavered from that. But then I had people telling me that I was crazy for criticizing Boeheim by saying there are things you can criticize him for. So
make up your mind, Syracuse.
Fun week on Twitter. Love it. Love the platform.
No, honestly, like, Syracuse fans are going to make me mind. Like, just pick the battles. And, like, yeah, I do feel like at this point, like, there's a growing anti-Boeheim camp.
It's always been there.
It's always been there. It's getting more vocal. But, like, it's getting more vocal for all the wrong reasons.
That's why whenever, like, something happens with Boeheim, like, he says something dumb, which happens, like, once a year, or, like, some of the other things have happened over through the years, and people are like, oh, the Syracuse fan base will, like, go to any length to defend Boeheim. He's like a king there. I'm like, you do not know what you're talking about. There are people like that for sure. And there are a lot of people that wish Boeheim would have retired like in 2004. Like, it is not a Joe Paterno situation. No. There are definitely like, there's a segment of the fan base that is like that. And there is a there's a very vocal, larger than you'd expect fan base that just does not like Jim Boeheim. And it's actually like shocking how big that portion is. So, I think Boeheim has more than earned the right to retire whenever the hell he wants. And I think at the same time, you can say, like, I wish the offense was a little bit more forward-thinking and progressive. But at the same time, we've seen, like, aside from that Georgia Tech game, it seems to be moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, I think, you know, while we didn't maintain the same torrid pace as the Duke game in the Pitt win, I felt like the second half was a real, you know, kind of nice bit of progress. The team shot well from outside. It seemed like they were spreading the ball around. It seemed like they were using different options. Tyus Battle is still the center point of it, and I think that that can be something that better teams than Pitt can game plan against. To your Boeheim point, yeah, I would direct anyone who says that Boeheim walks on water in Syracuse, which is true to some extent, but to say he doesn't get criticized, head to the Syracuse.com comments after any close win or any loss, and you will find a much, much different story than the narrative that is being peddled in that regard.
Yeah, the Battle thing is I think we're starting to move towards a place where Battle is rounding into the player that we were hoping we're going to get this year. His points per game are down like one full point, which is fine. He's taking more than two fewer shots. He's making the same amount, and he's shooting over 45% from the field. He was only at 39.9% last year. His three-point shooting is actually down, but I think part of that is he's taking up almost half of the amount of threes as he did last year. He's not forcing a lot. He's hit so many big ones that it's almost surprising that his percentage is that low, and we have more options from deep, so I think it's kind of masked it. So I do think we're seeing Battle play to his strengths. He's definitely getting to the free-throw line more, too. But we are seeing him play to his strengths a bit more and seeing a more efficient player there overall.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly the player that, you know, like you and I talked about, like during the offseason, at the beginning of this season. Like, if Battle's numbers take a slight step back and his efficiency goes up, that's a win. And so far, yeah, he's absolutely rounded into the sort of player that SU needs him to be, and really, like, NBA scouts need him to be, if he's going to be able to stick around, you know, that first round-ish projection that he seems to be bouncing back and forth from between a late first and an early second. But in any case, like, Battle's obviously shown himself to be the type of guy who is well-rounded, who can, you know, take over a game with his scoring. And, you know, I think, you know, the lazy comparison is Malachi Richardson for a lot of folks, but I think, to be honest, like, Battle has a much longer resume of that sort of play and sharpshooting, and I think a more impressive inside game at the collegiate level. So it's not to only boil his game down to that, of course, but in general, I think Battle has sports a much better collection of skills and a more maybe well-honed collection of skills than Richardson had at that point. He'll still probably go later than Richardson did, however, but, you know, anybody who gets him could end up with a really nice addition, again, whether it's in the first or second round, and a guy who is able to, you know, come in off the bench as a spark. And, like, there's a lot of players who've done a really nice job in the NBA coming off the bench and playing 20 minutes a night and just knowing how to you know, get a hot hand and then stay hot.
Yeah, and I can see him being a guy who, like you said, comes off the bench and spark on offense. I can see him being a solid defender on the wing. He has that size at 6'5", 6'6". He's rebounded the ball better this year. He's actually, I think, one of the more under-discussed things is, I think his ball handling's gotten a lot better. We're seeing more of those, like, almost James Harden-style step-backs. But he's down, his turnovers are down, like, pretty significantly, down from 2.4 a game to 1.7. And I think his usage rate, if we had, like, the advanced numbers in front of us, is probably down as well. But I don't think it's down so much that explains all of that. So I do think that we're seeing some of, like, other things on the fringes that he has worked on. The one thing that just isn't quite there that would, like, really put him over the top is that really exceptional three-point shooting. But I do think it's better than the numbers indicate, just based on, like, the critical, like, nature of the shots he has hit. And I know it's hard to, like, measure, like, someone's clutchness or whatever. But he makes the shots that really, really matter at a really, really high clip.
Yeah, I mean, in college basketball, there's only a handful of players every year that you would trust with the ball in their hands and to take that last shot. And, you know, Battle is certainly one of them. I
don't know that many people in college basketball this year that I would trust over him. Like, if I really went through it, I'm sure I'd find a handful. But, like, even in that Duke game the other night, or are you trusting, and I think RJ Barrett's a magnificent player and is going to be probably the number one or two pick and it's going to be great. At this point in their careers, I would trust Tyus Battle to make a shot over RJ Barrett. Now, that's not saying I wouldn't trade them or something, but in like that one situation, I think Battle just has it. He just has no fear in that situation.
Yeah, and that counts for something, again, especially at the college game where you have a lot of, you know, teenagers, kids in their young 20s who are going to make mistakes. And if you have somebody who's got ice in his veins and is not going to make that sort of mistake late, that is a, you know, an intangible advantage that can't necessarily be boiled down to stats.
Yeah, there's definitely something to having veteran player. I was going to say senior. He's not a senior. It just feels like it just anyone who's like second semester sophomore feels like a senior now in college basketball. But there is something to having a veteran team, and I think we are seeing that a bit as we move forward. And like I said earlier, the Georgia Tech loss really kind of sticks out now because we've won now 6 of 7 games. We've beaten three, not great, but three like decent ACC teams by double digits, and then we also beat Duke at Duke, and that includes like then two of the like not great but like solid non-conference wins at the end there. So it's like a weird, like, we've looked, if you just took away that Georgia Tech loss or made it like just swapped in a team that's more like reasonable, like you just turn Georgia Tech into I don't know who's like a mid-level ACC team right
Miami.
Now.
Miami.
Yeah, like Miami on Thursday. If you just swap that out, we'd feel like probably great.
Oh, yeah.
Just Georgia Tech is not very good, and then showed it again this weekend. I think they got blown out by someone this weekend.
They might have, I forget who. But Georgia Tech in general has been like, has played us really close.
Yeah, historically, like through since we joined the conference.
Yeah, like I don't really get why. Because the team, not like they have like a clear identity. It's not like they're designed in a certain way. Tech just managed to play us close and beat us a couple times actually on our home floor, which is annoying. I think in general, like, you know, we say going into the ACC, Syracuse would win one that they weren't supposed to and lose one that they weren't supposed to at the very least. We've already done both of those things.
Yep.
So, yeah, now I don't really know what happens next. If we just go chalk the rest of the way, you know, I think SU is going to be sweating it out come Selection Sunday. But, again, a lot of that, too, depends on how they do in the ACC tournament. I said before the ACC started that SU could go 10-8 and not really pick up any big wins that would get them into the tournament. The Duke win at Duke obviously resets that conversation. I think a 10-8 Syracuse team with Duke, with the Duke win on there, probably gets in. Again, probably dependent, too, on the ACC tournament, and also dependent on who those other losses are. If they just lose to teams that they were supposed to, I think that they're probably in. If they drop a couple that they're not supposed to, but then also if you're still going 10-8, maybe even 11-7, then you're probably also picking up a couple more upsets. So you know, if we can avoid losing to a team like BC, or really like none of the ACC teams are in that, like, you know, bottom of the barrel, like from an RPI / net standpoint this year, so you get to avoid, even if you lose to BC like we miraculously do like every other year for some reason. BC is still about 120th or so, maybe to 150th in terms of relative strength. So you're not necessarily, you know, dropping to the lower caliber of team that you were, you know, even a couple of years ago when they were as low as like 250 to 300.
Yeah, like even the dregs of the ACC are definitely like a step above where they have been, and there are just plenty of opportunities for like solid wins going forward. So I think 10-8 with the Duke win, as long as we don't have any, I mean, I don't know that we could have a horrendous loss, but as long as, like, you know, we keep things pretty on pace.
Let's avoid losing at home anymore.
Yeah, that'd be good. And then, I mean, the team's played so well on the road that, like, that also makes me feel pretty good. Yeah, I think 10-8, we'd probably still be, like, discussed in the bubble. I'd feel better about it this year than I have the last two. But I think 11 wins pretty solidly gets us, you know, what we need to have.
Yeah, I think 11 is definitive, because 11 probably includes, you know, a win over somebody like NC State, UNC, maybe Virginia Tech, like one of those teams. And that's, again, that should mean Louisville, too, is in there. Like, any additional win like that, I think, should put them over the top, assuming they just take care of business the rest of the way and then maybe win a game or two in the ACC tournament.
Yeah, and the ACC tournament, I mean, we did, what did we win? One game last year or two?
Yeah, we won one last year.
Yeah, but we happened to, like, see better last year. It'd be nice to, like, continue to improve upon that after so many years of just not being able to do anything, which was really annoying.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely dominated Wake. Thank you again to Marek Dolezal.
It was a UNC game that we, like... I mean, I was there. We hung in there. It was not, like, a bad showing, but it was a tough draw for the second game.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the issue with the double bye. That's always the issue with, you know, the way it works. I think it's, what, the 10-11 game? Or, no, 10-15 game. We're like, yeah, if you're the 10 seed, you're better off because then you get a win against the worst team in the conference to start. And then you get to jump in with a day head start and a little bit of steam in the next game against the 7 seed, and then you get to jump in against the 2 seed instead of the 1. Like, you basically get the 10 seed's a better spot than the 8 or 9.
Yep. It's not a play that played. I think it's played out that way pretty much every or almost every year.
Yeah, I remember. I think it didn't for a few, and it's also hard to quantify because for like a 3 or 4 year stretch, there was at least one ACC team that was like not allowed to play in the tournament.
Yep. Us once.
Us once. Louisville once. Maryland once. yeah, everybody just playing their part to making it an incomplete data set. But yeah, I think if we can get into that like top 6 range, I'm feeling a little bit better just in terms of like how the bracket shakes out.
Sorry, what was that?
So I feel like, you know, if we break it to the top 6 or so, I'm feeling much better about how the bracket shakes out.
Oh, yes, 100%.
I mean, to be honest,
right now we are.
We are, and right now we're tied for first with a lot of other teams. I do not want a double bye, however. I mean, I'll take the double bye if we're going to win that many games. That means we're in. But
yeah, if we that's the thing about the double bye. It's like, if you obviously it'd be nice to win the ACC tournament or go far, but you have a double bye in the ACC. I don't see a situation in which you're not making the NCAA tournament.
Correct. And making the NCAA tournament with like a top like 6 seed at worst.
Which is probably still in play for us.
Yeah, 100%.
If we just like tear it up, win 12 games, like it'd be hard. Like you'd have a lot of things going your way in terms of like the team playing better at the end of the year than the beginning of the year. Frank Howard, which you could debate like how much that's had an impact, but like it definitely looks better since he came back and has gotten healthier. And then the Duke win obviously puts us over the top probably. So there's a lot that can happen. This team still has like pretty much everything. I'd say everything from like a 4 seed or probably a 5 seed is like the absolute ceiling. Unless, I mean, maybe we could go higher if we like won the ACC tournament or like won out or something. But in terms of like realistic ceiling, I still think like it's pretty high in terms of how we get into the NCAAs. Obviously getting incredibly far ahead of ourselves, but it's fun to think about that versus like where we were like 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah, and you know what, like in people can see too, like we don't have to necessarily like reach those probably overstated, you know, top 15 goals that people seem to assign to us before the season started, and a lot of SU fans, maybe self-included at times, assigned to us before the season started. You know, a good season I think still ends up being, you know, somewhere around top 25, win a game or two in the NCAA tournament. Like, I'm not going to count our pennies yet and say that we're there because we're not. But, yeah, I think that, you know, this team playing itself back to the top 25 would be a nice accomplishment. I think it would be, you know, indicative of a team on the upward swing. We'll see what happens the rest of the way, though. I'm pretty encouraged by the level of play we've seen. I don't expect us to score 95 a game, but I think if we can get back above, you know, 75 or at least get to 75 on a regular basis or close to it in conference play, I think that this team becomes very, very dangerous when combined with their defensive prowess.
Yeah, they weren't quite running like they do or they did in the Duke game against Pitt, but I think it still was like a bit more appealing than like even the Clemson game and obviously the Georgia Tech game, which we can like never talk about again.
Nope.
They definitely like, I don't know. I think that's definitely their sweet spot. Like if they're playing at a pace where they can get around 75 to 80, I think we're in pretty good shape because that means they're getting up and down. I think that we've seen that pace benefit Syracuse in the past, especially with teams are taking bad shots against the zone. And we saw that, like, in stretches in that Pitt game where, like, Pitt didn't play terribly, but they were just, like, you know, 5 minutes at a time where they just couldn't figure out the defense. And while we never, like, fully put them away, I think we got the distance, like, well enough in the late second half when we, I think we were up, like, 14 at one point, and they fought back a little bit. But it was never, like, so close that it got too spooky, even with it being Pitt, a team that has had our number for so long. So it'd be nice if we can keep that going. And it is cool to see that we've, you know, handled Pitt, Clemson, Notre Dame at Notre Dame, which is a tough place to play, pretty well. And that makes me feel pretty solid going forward, at least against that, like, bottom half of the ACC, that we can, like, beat those teams by 10 and it doesn't look like a crazy, it's not like we play it out of our minds or anything.
Right. Redirecting a little bit to the wider college basketball conversation, we'll get back to Syracuse at the other half of this podcast, I think. But Dan, who do you think your one seeds right now? Keeping in mind what's going on in the Virginia Tech North Carolina game as we speak.
Yeah, I think you have to put Tennessee in right now. They just look great. They are 16-1. I think they're the new number one team in both polls. I think I would still have Duke, especially after that Virginia win.
Agreed.
They look really, really good, especially even without Trey Jones, and they should have him back sooner than later. I was kind of, I mean, not to, like, root for injury. I was kind of hoping he might still be out when we played him again. It doesn't sound like that'll be the case. And he was obviously a huge, you know, I mean, you just saw it in the first couple minutes in that game. He was making Frank Howard's life hell. So he's a really, really important part of that team, and they played awesome without him against UVA, a very good UVA team. Behind them, I think I'd probably bump UVA down for now, although I kind of expect them to be a one, maybe two at worst by the time we get to the end of the season. I still like Michigan. They're 17-1. They had their first loss at Wisconsin this weekend. They just seem very balanced. And I've just really enjoyed watching them this year. And then I feel like after them, it's either Virginia or Gonzaga. And, you know, I'll stick with Virginia. It was a close loss at Duke, so I'll stick with Virginia as the fourth one.
Yeah, I buy that. I think for me, it's going to be Duke 1, Tennessee 2, Virginia 3, Michigan 4.
And then you have the Zags, you have Michigan State. And then I think that's a pretty solid cutoff. I don't think you're putting Nevada with that loss and some other shaky performances anywhere near. They're probably not even a top 2 seed right now. I know the polls are at number 7. Vatat's about to get stomped, or I think they're still losing pretty big at UNC, right?
It was 19 last I saw.
Yeah. Kentucky is not there. Kansas looks very shaky. Marquette, I'm not buying. So, yeah, I think the number ones are, like, a pretty clear group of 5 from which the 4 number ones, and I think there's a pretty big drop-off after those 5. Michigan State, I actually haven't seen enough of this year, so I'm not going to cast too much judgment on them, but I don't think they're number one.
Yeah, I have to agree with that so far. I think my two seeds are probably, like, if I'm just applying an arbitrary cutoff, are probably Michigan State, right now at least, Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky, and I don't know, probably the Zags, and then you knock Auburn down to the 3 line.
Yeah, after the loss to Kentucky. There's, like, I think it's going to be one of those things where, like, the twos don't scare you that much based on being twos, but, like, there's a large group of teams that'll be, like, kind of tough 3-4s.
Yeah.
And then the ones, even the ones that, like, I don't think anyone's going to, like, go see Tennessee, and I know they're very good. I don't think anyone's going to be, like, super, super afraid to play them, even if they have, like, a pair of really, really good players, and they've obviously earned it. It's just, like, I think Duke is probably the scariest team in terms of just on paper, but they're obviously beatable. I mean, we've done it. Gonzaga's done it. Gonzaga without one of their best players, us, scrapping together. This isn't a year where there's, like, one team that's – obviously Duke has, like, the fire, the star power, but they're not, like, head over heels better than a lot of these other teams. So I think this is going to be a pretty competitive tournament throughout.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's a lot of – I mean, we don't have to go through the whole bracket, but I do feel like – you know, when you look at teams competing for that 3 seed and on the 3 line too, like, these can be really scary 3 seeds. Teams like Va Tech, teams like UNC. If Michigan State ends up dropping over there, Marquette, I know you mentioned, has a team that could jump up. Auburn, that we talked about too, like Texas Tech's in there. Iowa State's in there. Like, there's, I mean, even Houston is a scary team that, like, probably won't have the strength of schedule necessarily. to get them on that three line, but a team that could be really scary at the four and really be hell for a one seed in the Sweet 16. Like, there's definitely a lot of, there's definitely, like you said, there's a clear like group for in competition for that one seed, you know, those four one seeds. But then after that, like there's a lot of stuff going on in the middle there that you could see a team that's like a two or three seed caliber end up in a five spot and like really pissing people off.
Yeah, it could be like a real mess trying to seed these things. Obviously, there's plenty of time to like sort itself out, but right. I can definitely see that.
Oh well, I mean, hopefully it's our problem. I guess if we do really well, but worst case it's not, and worst case we get to listen to other people bitch while we hopefully make another surprise run.
I'm with it.
Yeah. Quick note just for Lewis. My wife just got home, so I'm going to mute for a sec, help her out to get back inside, and then they'll go to another part of the house, and then we can continue the podcast in like 2 minutes.
Cool.
All right, so I'll be right back then. All right, I'm back.
Cool.
All right, so I think we're about halfway. Why don't we talk a little beer, a little halftime? What have you been drinking, Dan?
All right, so again, didn't have too much new stuff. I was mostly working out what was in my fridge. I had some more of the Captain's Daughter by Greysale, which I brought up the other weekend. I had some more of the Stolpin that I have. I did have some all-day IPA, and I guess the one new thing I had, which I'm not even totally sure what beer it was, I checked into the one that I think it was, even though it says that this is no longer made, so I think this could have been anything. It was called Wally's Winter at the bar that by me. There is a Wally's Winter from Bull and Bush Pub and Brewery in Colorado. I don't know that this is that beer, but it was pretty good for a winter. It was like very flavorful, had like a lot of like nutmeggy, sweeter notes, but like surprisingly drinkable for how dark it was. So that might be from the Colorado Brewing, even though it says it's not brewed anymore. It might not have been. I don't really know how to figure that out, but it was the closest name match, and it looks generally the same. It's just kind of a random thing to be at the bar by me.
I trust it.
Yes, I also looked, and like someone else had checked into this one on Untappd at the same bar as me, although it looks like most people check in at the actual brewery that it's brewed at, so I really... it could have been like someone's homebrew that they put on tap or something that they called Wally's Winter. But it was good, so if you're at the Wallace in Harlem, the Wally's Winter is solid. It's also the tap handle was like, I think they like hand wrote it with a Sharpie, so it's kind of a mystery. Like, I honestly feel like it might have been like a house brew, even though they don't usually do that. I'm confused by the whole thing, but I'm rolling with it for now.
I feel like you did your due diligence, and I respect where you netted out.
So it's called Wally's Winter. There is another beer also called that. I don't know the same beer, but they might be.
All right. Somebody go investigate. A couple things I had. Firestone Walker had a new IPA out, the Santa Lucia IPA. It was really good, West Coast style, so a big fan on my end. They also had the new Luponic Distortion number 12, the latest in their kind of rotating series. Really good. Again, lighter IPA, only 5.9%. There's tangerine, some honeydew. Definitely like tasted like a session, but was a little bit higher on the ABV mark. Was over at Smog City down in Torrance over the weekend, and had they had their Infinite Wishes, their annual like bourbon barrel aged Imperial Stout release come out. So I had their flight of all the variants. They had the 18 and 19. On draft. They also had Mocha Infinite Wishes, which was basically tasted like a perfect blend of cold brew and an Imperial Stout, which was absolutely delicious. Had their coconut and vanilla variant that was super good because it was fresh. I feel like with coconut and vanilla, they kind of fade as flavors pretty quickly in bottles, so it was nice to get those on draft. And then they had French Toast Infinite Wishes, which had like cinnamon and it managed to, despite having cinnamon and all these other like kind of sweeter flavors in there, it didn't taste like cloyingly sweet, and it actually like balanced out really well. So I was really glad to see that, and really glad I got to taste that. Also had a Wow Pop pale ale from Smog City when I was down there, but yeah, that was it.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys get the Firestone Walker variety packs out there, but
I don't know if we have the variety. We get like the basics that they roll out, the IPA, and there's one other one that makes out a lot, but I'm not sure if I've seen the variety pack too much.
Well, if you see it, the variety pack is great. Right now it's the only way you can get the Santa Lucia IPA, and then Luponic Distortion was actually dropped in there first, but they had the one variety pack was the Santa Lucia, the Luponic Distortion, Easy Jack. They're like British style IPA, that's their session, and then they had Union Jack as well.
Yeah, Union Jack gets around here a lot too. I'll keep a lookout next time I go shopping.
Yeah, I mean, as far as pricing goes, like $14-15 for a 12 pack of like really good beer, and then like I'm usually not one for variety packs, but I felt like this particular one was well worth the price.
Nice.
Yeah. So pivoting a little bit, everyone's favorite topic during basketball season, football. I know, several people just dropped off. we're going to talk basketball again, I swear. We're going to talk a little bit about football first, however.
We have actual news to talk about, so it's not like...
Yeah, this is totally fine. This is news that dropped last week. Dan, I already made my case online a bunch that this is actually about as good of a schedule as you can get. How about you?
Yeah, no, I think this is a very... And we've talked about it before. We've known who we're playing for a while. But even the way it lays out is super... It works out pretty well. We have the two road games to start. I know I've harped on that we should always start on the road because of the fair. We start on the road for 2 weeks. I don't necessarily think we need two road games all the time, but I'm fine with it because it makes our home opener the Clemson game, and hopefully we're 2-0. I think there's a very good chance. I won't say like we're going to. I would say there's a very, very good chance that we will get College Game Day for that game, based on basically the only real like there aren't great alternatives that week. As long as they don't give it to Clemson for week two, and even then, there's no rule they won't feature the same team twice in a row. I think they'd like to avoid it, but I also think there's a very good chance that they go to Texas, who is hosting LSU. Texas hasn't hosted Game Day since 2009, and they should be 1-0, I believe, to start. Right. So I feel like there's a very good chance that Texas gets week two, we get week three for our home opener at 2-0, rematch of last year's very close game. First time at the Dome since we upset them 2 years ago, the national champions versus an upstart ACC team. John Wildhack is probably already on the phones working on this for our first ever Game Day game. And we know that Game Days like to do that more often. Like they went to Wazoo finally this year. They went to Indiana. I don't know if it was the first time, but it was one of the first times last year. They like to mix it up a little bit. So it's not always, you know, Ohio State, Alabama, whoever. So I think there's that'll be fun. Then we have WMU and Holy Cross, which is a nice come down from the Clemson game. Our buys are weeks are October 5th and November 9th, so really well positioned, I think, to give us rest when we need it. Our first buy is ahead of a team at NC State, which is a tricky one. They're always, you know, pretty solid. I think they might take a step back this year based on losing Finley and a couple other players, but I'm pretty happy with having a buy before that game. Our second one is before our last two road games, or our last two games, which are both on the road. Which is maybe one of the only like things you could criticize is starting and finishing with two road games apiece, but that means
we get Wake too after Louisville. If you're looking at the blog, unfortunately, yes, an ad pops up right in the middle.
That's exactly what happened. Okay, so that makes me okay. That does make more sense. The authorized generics, whatever the hell that is, ad. Shout out to. Ad choice or wherever the provider is here pops up directly before that last thing, and it was at the bottom of my screen. So then before two road games, which is good too because those are winnable games. So I think these are really well laid out here. I think the home road splits are pretty favorable. I mean, we should the only home game I think we'll be underdogs in is Clemson. So I think this is like we think this team has a pretty high ceiling, and even the floor I think is higher than we've been for a while. I'm a fan of what we have going on here.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn as to where I'm starting this year's how the Orange finish whatever record. In the past, it started at 3-9. It's not going to start there this year. I feel like it's probably going to have to be somewhere.
I think 5-7 is a fair, like, worst case doomsday post. Because, like, I would be very surprised and very disheartened if we went 5-7. But I think it's fair to have, like, one losing record in that list.
Yeah, I think 5-7 is fair. I'll take the bullet there, as always. And then, yeah, we'll march up to 9-3 from there. James, my dog, will get 10-2. And he'll explain to you how SU ends up in the Orange Bowl. And yeah, it'll be a good time. But this schedule is about as favorable as you can get when it comes to the layout. There are a lot of potential toss ups on here, and a lot of games we could lose. I don't want to pretend that we're just going 10-2 and that's it. Like, there's a lot of games we could lose. But yeah, like you said too, There's only one game, at least right now, that we're not going to be favored at home, and that's Clemson. The only game on the... I think we'll find a couple games we might not get favored on the road, but like even the game at NC State, it's going to be a pretty close line. At Florida State...
At Florida State, it all depends on how they are.
Right. Like, yeah, by that point in the season, who knows? Duke and Louisville, like, I don't think Louisville's going to get back right away, but Duke, they played reasonably well without Daniel Jones last year. David Cutcliffe just always has the team well coached. I think... You know, having such a manageable November, like, there's an easy way for us to get to six wins before November, and then to have four potential wins in November is huge. Like, I think this is the most manageable November schedule I can remember as a Syracuse football fan.
If anything, we've had backloaded schedules, and this one is, like, not even front-loaded, it's just well-dispersed. And it's also just not a hard schedule to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, we're catching some teams on what should be a down-ish year. We're catching a couple teams that, like, usually are better, like Louisville, who obviously comes coming off a disaster season, and will probably have some growing play pains under Satterfield. Not that I don't think he'll get them back to, like, a pretty solid place. I just think year one is a tough sled. Wake, you know, they're Wake. I think they'll be fine. Same with Duke. Like, these aren't like, bad teams. They're just, like, you kind of know what you're getting. They're, like, a solid... 6-7 win team, maybe they, and it's not crazy to think they might have a slide for a year. So, yeah, I mean, it's Clemson, it's Florida State's a wild card. I think NC State's usually fine, Pitt's usually fine, BC's usually fine. Like, these are all like the teams, they kind of like what we saw this year, and we won most of those games. It depends on what Syracuse, I think a lot of the schedule depends on what Syracuse looks like versus like having to avoid some mines on the, in the schedule here.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, last year, you know, in your traditional toss-up games, we went 3-1. If we can go 2-2 or 3-1 again this year in those toss-ups, you know, we're probably bowling. 3-1, I think you're definitely bowling, just because you've got, you know, Holy Cross, Liberty, and Western Michigan, the non-conference schedule. I do love the bye placement. I know you mentioned it too. Having Holy Cross and then a bye basically gives you 2 weeks to really rest up a lot of starters. And then you get the short week at NC State. But again, you do get pretty much like 2.5 weeks prep for NC State, which is enormous. And then with the Friday night game, instead of having what would be a short week against Pitt, is instead
you have like kind of a weird extended week.
Yeah, you end up with an eight-day week, you know, to prep for Pitt in what's going to be a national game and a national game that nobody will watch outside of the two fan bases, if even the two fan bases bother tuning in.
So a Syracuse Pitt game.
Did no one tell the ACC when they scheduled this game that...
Like, we don't care.
We don't care. They don't care.
Off our schedule forever. We would not care. And Pitt wouldn't care either.
Like, no, they wouldn't.
It's just the most boring, quote, rivalry, unquote.
But, like,
ever.
Who do they think
just
is watching
no
this
one,
game?
There's no passion.
But who's watching this game? Like, on a Friday night? Like, why did you waste... No offense, like, to either... Again, love Syracuse. Why did you waste a prime Friday night spot on this goddamn game when it's destined for a nooner?
Us and Pitt are like an arranged marriage that lasts 60 years, and then like one of the two dies, and the other one doesn't bother showing up to the funeral because they're like, eh.
Fine, whatever.
We were just like ships passing in the night for a long time, but we were legally married.
I honestly wish they would, like, I think that us and Wake would have been more entertaining for, like, neutral viewers.
We've had more notable games against Wake in the last however many years since we've been playing them regularly, even before the ACC, than we've had against Pitt. Just like, even like when we were beating Pitt regularly, Pitt was awful. And like, how many like classic Pitt games? My Pitt memories are like the 14-13 game or whatever it was that we actually won a couple of years ago at the Dome, and Chandler Jones not being able to return the interception because he was playing on one leg and we lost bowl eligibility. And that's just a lot of just bad. Like, and not just as it was bad for Syracuse, just like not fun or notable games. Like,
you know,
just...
what though? Recent history has shown we've actually played like the last almost decade, we've played like our closest like annual like collection of football games like that we have like pretty much ever in this series.
Yes.
But like all of the games just suck.
Yeah, like, they're not fun. They're not interesting. Win or lose. Like, they're just blah.
Yeah.
Just nothing.
Like, starting,
we've had fun games with, like, everyone else in the ACC, we've had moments. The NC State game this year was a blast. The NC State game that we won down there was way fun, even if it was, like, a completely different type of team under Schaefer. Florida State, like, we've had interesting games with, and even, like, the blowouts have had moments. BC, obviously, I think is more of a rivalry. We get way more into that, even if that's not like the most exciting thing ever. Louisville, same thing. We've had some really fun games with Louisville. Pitt, just like, no, it just doesn't matter. I don't even know who I'd rather play every year. Just not them.
No, I know.
Like, Vatek or Miami would be more interesting, even if it would be worse for us.
Well, this is why you just switch us into the Coastal, and then you just make BC our permanent rival.
Yep. I would actually almost miss playing Clemson. I think the Clemson game...
The Clemson internet rivalry has turned into a fun thing.
It's fun, and also we play them hard enough where, like, I'm not super... Like, I'll be worried about the Clemson game this year, but I'm more like, it's so fun to beat them. Like, the one time we've beat them. It's so fun to beat them, and then even this past year was, like, so close. The fact that we're, like, kind of becoming a... And even the A.J. Long game, we very well could have beaten them.
With anybody but A.J. Long under center.
Yeah, like, if we had any semblance of an offense, we would have 3 wins against them. 2 at Death Valley. Or we could have had 3 wins against them. I don't want to, like, say we would have won this year, but we very well could have 3 wins against Clemson, 2 of which are at Death Valley, 1 of which was with a terrible Syracuse team. So the fact that we're, like, kind of a thorn in their side is so much fun.
4, even technically. I'll make the stretch on the 10-point loss at the Dome, too.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't terrible. That's a little bit of a stretch, but it wasn't like a blowout.
I mean, we were in that game.
Blown out by them twice.
I know.
So, yes, I would miss the Clemson series a little bit. I would make the trade just because it would be good for the team.
Right.
I wouldn't really miss Florida State as much as fun as it was beating them this year. Like, I mean, I don't really have any...
I mean, Noles fans are fun for us. Not anybody else, but we're friends with them for some reason.
Yeah, it's strange bedfellows. It just... The rest of the Atlantic, like, we have history with Louisville, we have history with BC, who would probably keep Wake. We have, like, kind of weird history, where they probably want us gone.
They're over us at this point.
Yeah, NC State fans don't like us very much, I don't think.
No. I might actually go with the NC State game this year.
October 10th. Oh, it's a Thursday.
I mean, it could be fun.
Really trying to go to the Clemson game. I don't know if I can go to another, but midweek honestly wouldn't be the worst thing if I could get back for Saturday. I'm going to make every effort to get up to the Clemson game. It's my birthday weekend. It is going to hopefully be game day. Like, I feel like really stupid if I miss that game.
Yeah, if I were you, I would definitely be there. Looking at these plus, go for it.
I was going to say, plus the nice thing about the Dome, it's not like basketball where you have to, like, worry about where you're sitting.
Right.
Everywhere's great. Everywhere's a good seat.
Yeah, so the subtle hint... go to the games, everyone.
Buy season tickets. I might just buy, like, honestly, I may buy season tickets to get a Clemson ticket and just sell the rest for a meager amount to kind of make my money back. I don't know what I'll do about my friend's tickets, but, like, I might buy 2 season tickets. Like, who cares? You're not paying more. You're probably going to pay more on the secondary market for 1 Clemson ticket or one group of Clemson tickets than you are for a season ticket, or it'll be close. And if you're just kind of diligent about selling on StubHub, even if you only sell for $15, like, it'll make up the difference.
Worst case, it's a donation for your favorite team.
Right. Yes. And you get, like, a nice little mailer, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, agreed. Before we move on from football, one more thing. We're talking about Pitt for a little bit. Since 2011, only 2 of these games have been, like, well, I would say 3 of these games have been double-digit wins for either team. All 3 of those happened to be Pitt. But only 1 of them was a blowout, the 30-7 game in 2014 when we absolutely quit. And I was absolutely – I remember the story I wrote still to this day, big surprise, about just how disgusted I was with the just completely mailed-in effort from the coaching staff. I think that was the moment that Schaefer lost me. I think he punted on 3rd down in that one.
The old G-Rob.
Yeah, one of those, if memory serves.
I actually, like, don't really remember this game. I'm looking at the bot store now.
It was undeniable garbage that just, like, Pitt just... It was one of those games where Pitt just did Pitt things. They just ran the ball. They just did whatever the hell they wanted. I think...
We punted on 4th and 1 on
our last drive. Was it. That was the one. Where, like, we punted on 4th and 1 when the game was already lost. And I said, like, are you kidding?
With 7 minutes left, down 30-7, we punted on 4th and 1.
Right.
And Riley Ditson, of course, had a great punt and picked up for a penalty. So we ended up putting him back to the 3. But that doesn't mean it was the right thing to do.
No, it wasn't. But, yeah, look at the rest of these games. The 33-20.
Oh, my God. Mitch Kimball started this game.
Yeah.
I do remember this.
2014 in a nutshell.
Oh, man.
That the season was trash. I actually, like, I turned off, was, I think the final game of that season might have been the Duke game. Or no, that was the final home game of that season. When I knew that we weren't going to be bowl eligible, but then, like, that sealed it. I remember, like, just stopping watching at halftime. Like, I can't do this to myself anymore.
You know what's sad? Is there some, like, memorable Syracuse players in this team? Like, Prince Tyson Dolly was still playing for us, right, and had a fumble on our, like, second drive on the first play. Irv Phillips obviously was on this team. Jared West is catching passes. It's, like, unfortunate that, like, this team couldn't figure some more stuff out. There was, like, guys who deserved better on this team.
Well, you knew what was going to happen to this season on game one. Like, after the Nova debacle, there was no coming back. And oh boy, were we correct. I was watching that one on my phone from a bar in Vancouver, ruining a vacation by just burying myself in Syracuse football for an entire evening.
The Nova game?
Yes.
The Nova game. I was in Columbia, South Carolina. I was down there visiting my friends who were moving, who just bought a house, and like six of them were moving into this house, like a post-grad frat house, essentially. And I was working remote the Friday night when that game was on, watching it on my friend's TV from his old apartment that he was moving out of, but I was by myself working on stuff for my job, and then getting ready to then meet up with him afterwards, and it was just so depressing. And then I thought that was bad, and then that was the game where South Carolina got absolutely railroaded by Texas A&M and the quarterback who transferred to TCU.
Kenny Hill.
I was at that game, which was like,
oh boy.
The Villanova game was not the low light of my football. I mean, I didn't really care that much, but like, it was not the low light of mine or my friend's football weekend, at least.
Yeah, I can't blame you there. I wish I could redo that entire situation. I wish Syracuse could redo that entire situation. I won't bother going through these Pitt games. I feel like we've moved on. But the scores indicate something that's not there. Like, anyone that looked at the last four games would say, oh man, SU Pitt's a blast. And nope. They would be wrong. It is not a blast.
You know, the one time it was fun was the stupid record game.
And we still lost.
And we still lost.
By
that
15.
Game was fun. I will give people that game.
That was a blast.
That game was insane.
I knew things were coming unglued, like, midway through the third quarter, where, like, I started, like, piecing together something for, like, a recap. And then, like, I started seeing, wait, nope, points are picking up here. Let's just hang around for a bit.
We couldn't keep up with NFL talent like Nathan Peterman, so.
Jesus. Anyway, last on the docket for today, upcoming opponent, Miami Hurricanes. Miami is the only team to lose to Florida State in ACC play so far, since BC knocked them off last night.
Is Florida State that they're struggling that bad? I didn't realize.
I'm pretty sure they are. Because did they lose to Clemson?
I think they were flipped up tonight.
Oh, did they?
I haven't looked at the score in a bit, but I think they were winning relatively big. I'll look it up.
Well, burn rescinded. Nope, they are. Yeah, they're 1-4.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they had started that slow. I know they have lost a couple, but yeah, Miami's 9-8. I think they're still without one of their best players. Right, he's in NCAA hell.
Yes.
Dude who changed his name.
Never a great sign.
It was Huel. Is he now? He's now Duan Hernandez.
That sounds right.
Yes. One of their best players. 6'11" junior. Averaged 12 points a game last year, but like was definitely on the upswing. And he is stuck in eligibility hell because I think he was involved in the NCAA FBI thing. I'm not 100% sure if that's the reason. I assume so because Miami is. But, yeah, they just haven't cleared him. And it's kind of the same thing with Silvio D'Souza at Kansas, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's not good. They're 9-8 overall. They are in towards the bottom of the ACC. But it's still Miami. They're well-coached. They're talented. Kind of similar to Georgia Tech where you just can't, like, totally rule them out. So I feel pretty good about it. But, you know, we can't totally count our chickens in this one yet.
Yeah, I don't understand this team at all. They... I mean, they lost to Rutgers, they lost to Yale, they lost to Penn by 14. They barely beat Houston Baptist. Campbell gave them a little bit of a run. Then they proceeded to test NC State. Louisville blew them out. They lost to Florida State, which again, Florida State, former top 25 team, now in the absolute cellar of the ACC somehow. I don't really know what this Miami team is. They you'll notice the name Vasiljevic, the guy who lit us up surprisingly a couple years ago. I think we understand what he is now. But yeah, he's a very capable marksman from three. A lot of these guys on Florida State, I mean, sorry, on Miami are actually. It'll piss off everybody, that mistake. But yeah, they have several capable three-point shooters. Everybody on this roster, except for Abuka Zindu, can shoot threes, which could be problematic for us, if only for the sense that it should extend the zone a little bit. They're pretty accurate, just from the floor in general, hit about 46% of their shots. Chris Likes is obviously a player to watch with 18 points per game. I think the rebounding's fine. I feel like we should be able to out-rebound this team. I feel like SU's recent resurgence has been in part built on some quality rebounding. And I think we're going to win this game, but Miami is super pesky. And if some of the problems from the Georgia Tech game come back, this is another like stupid game that we lose and we should have won.
Yeah, it's a similar team. And like basically the entire bottom of the ACC is going to be – I don't think Wake's very good. I think we'll probably roll through Wake. But like BC has scoring. They've given us trouble in years past. I don't know. Do we play Notre Dame again? I don't think we do. But we do. We handled them. But like even Florida State, obviously they were ranked for a reason. I'm sure they're not going to go like 3-13 in this league or whatever. It's just like there's no team towards the bottom of this league that's like – just totally helpless, like years past where you've had like your 4-14 BC teams. Even those have had like some scoring punch. So, I don't think our team is quite good enough to really just pencil in any wins either. So I expect this Miami game to be pretty competitive, but I think along the same lines as the Clemson Notre Dame games, like I think we'll win this one by, 9 or 10 points.
I think we win this one by 6.
Okay.
Because I think something stupid happens, but we figure it out.
Also, I said Florida State was playing well earlier. I'm just going to go right ahead and say, Florida State's not playing tonight. My friend texted a bunch of us earlier and said, Florida State looks really good. They're going to beat us later this year, aren't they? And I just took his word for it. Florida State's not playing. I don't know who the hell he was talking about. They haven't played
Virginia Tech. Well in
the Virginia Tech wasn't looking good either, so maybe that was my first thought, but they're down like a million. So I have no idea who he's talking about.
Mercer,
so,
obviously. Yeah.
I don't think he listens to this podcast. I'm going to make him listen to this one just so he hears that he made me sound stupid on the podcast. Thanks, Eddie.
I was surprised, if only because I feel like it was yesterday that that Florida State lost to BC.
Yeah, it was Saturday. No, it was Saturday. Was it yesterday?
I don't know.
I thought it was the same day as our game against Pitt. He might have met Virginia Tech before UNC, like, I think maybe Virginia Tech was playing well, and then UNC, like, just went on a crazy run right after that. Either way, that's, like, it wasn't Florida State, so I apologize for sounding dumb.
It
could have just edited this out, but I had more fun calling out my friends on podcasts.
Yeah, this is much better. all right, but before we leave, maybe just a quick heat check here. Looking at the upcoming schedule, and that is the rest of the regular season, Dan, how many wins do you see here? Acknowledging that we're not trying to jinx anything. We're literally just saying how many wins we see on this list.
Okay, I haven't done this yet, so let's I'm just going to go down. I think we beat Miami.
Yep.
I think we went at BC.
Okay.
Even though I maybe shouldn't, but I think we will. At Pitt, I think we'll win. I feel good about how we batched against Pitt. I feel like we'll split FSU and BC. Okay. I feel like one of those will drop. So that's 4. At NC State's tough. I think we'll lose that. I think we'll beat Louisville, weirdly. I think Mac doesn't really know how to coach against us yet. I think we'll beat Louisville. We're not going to beat Duke twice. unfortunately. We're not going to beat UNC. I think we'll win at Wake. I think we'll win at Clemson.
All right.
Is that 12? Did I just talk us into 12?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I got 7. That gets us to 11.
Hold on, let me go down. 1, 2, 3. This is great. This is Francesa Est. 4, 5.
You saw Francesa,
yeah,
what he did.
Okay, I did 7. So 7 plus the existing 4. So 11. So yeah. So I was doing winning 11 games, which is, I think that gets us into the tournament pretty comfortably.
Agreed. I don't know if you saw what Francesa did today.
I did. It was wonderful.
for those who weren't following, Todd Gurley posted a photoshopped picture of him exchanging jerseys with the ref from the game, and Francesa thought it was real and then went on like a whole thing about it on his radio show.
And then had to be, I'm shocked he even admitted he then found out it wasn't real. Like, usually he'll just let it ride. Like, I'm pretty sure he still swears that Al Albuquerque isn't a person. Or that he didn't fall asleep that one time.
Christ. Okay, if I'm looking down the schedule, I'm seeing a win against Miami. I'll take wins at BC, at Pitt, against Florida State. Give me the win against BC, too. I think we lose at Wake for some reason. Actually, no. I think we lose at Clemson for some reason.
That's very fair.
Yeah. I think we lose at Clemson. Give me a win at NC State, however. I think we lose to Louisville at home because we kind of fall asleep at the wheel looking ahead at Duke. I think that three-game losing streak gets everybody a little nervous.
We always have one of those now, so you probably, like, you know, it's in there somewhere. Yeah. I don't think I had us doing it, but we always, I mean, we could easily lose to, like, BC, NC State, beat Louisville, or win one of those NC State Louisville games, and then lose to Duke, UNC, and then lose 4 or 5, and everyone will be upset. But we do that every year. We always have a bad, like, four or five game stretch now.
Yeah, and yeah, I think it'll be this one. I think Louisville, Duke, North Carolina, I think that's 0-3. I think we bounce back with a win at Wake. I think we lose narrowly to Virginia at home in what ends up being not a game day game, or not a game day game, but a big Monday. I think it's Big Monday for sure, but I don't think it gets the hype that it would normally, if only because we are only like a week removed from that rough stretch. And then I think we lose that game at Clemson because we kind of aren't really as focused as we would have been otherwise. But that still gets us to the same 11-7 mark. It gets us another quality win. I think that win in particular, I think the Louisville win's good. I think a win at NC State locks it in, barring some like for another first round exit in the ACC tournament and some other nonsense happening on the bubble.
Cool. Yeah, I think, I don't know, I almost feel better about like 12 than I do 10. I'm not like gonna gas up this team too much, but like I think it's just we've looked much better than worse. Like we had one really, really bad performance, which does happen, but like generally things are trending quite well, and I don't know, I think I'm just gonna be optimistic and say we're not going to do this whole bubble thing again. I think we're due for our first like actual solid tournament berth in a while.
I sure hope
since,
you're
what,
right.
2014?
Yes, since 2014, and we started 25-0 and then proceeded to lose a bunch, get probably underseeded as a 4, and or a 3 we were, I think, right?
Yes, and then lose, or 3 or 4, I don't remember.
Then we lose to Dayton. And then, yeah, a Dayton team that, you know, got to play at home, and then whatever.
Yep.
I'm actually going to be mentioning that game tomorrow in an article about the biggest gut punch games of recent Syracuse memory. So for those who would like to weigh in, you'll be doing that at some point this week before or after this podcast post. Anyway, Dan, anything else before we leave? It's been another fun one.
No, feel pretty good about things. I think luckily we've had this, I mean, the Duke, thank you for everyone to put up with our Duke podcast. I'm sure you didn't mind considering how things turned out. It would have been a very weird listen if we had lost, but it was what we ended up doing that night anyway. So this is a little bit more conventional, but fun nevertheless.
Agreed. Yeah, I got the people who loved it. The people who hated it. So I noticed, which is a theme with this podcast.
I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Agreed. All right, Dan, thanks as always. Much appreciated.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Of course. And everyone, you can listen to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast on Blog Talk Radio, on iTunes, on wherever else you listen to podcasts. That's numerous other services, apps, whatever. And go Orange.
Go Orange.
At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted.